A new era in Maine politics. Governor Janet Mills took the oath of office last night and is at work at the State House today. With her, a gaggle of freshman legislators ready to bring a new perspective to Augusta. In Governor Mills' inauguration speech last night, she outlined a number of priorities, including Medicaid expansion, tackling the opioid epidemic, focusing on climate change, attracting young professionals, and changing the political tone in the state. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we will talk with Maine Public's two political reporters, Mal Leary and Steve Missler, about the road ahead. What can we expect to happen this year? How hard will it be? What challenges face the new administration? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Last month, Maine legislators were sworn in, and yesterday, Janet Mills took the oath of office to become Maine's 75th governor. Today, we're going to discuss the issues likely to occupy the Maine political landscape in the year ahead, and more. Joining me, Mal Leary, Maine Public Radio's senior political correspondent, and Steve Missler, Maine Public Radio's chief political correspondent. Welcome back to Maine Calling, Mal and Steve.
Hello, Jennifer.
Thanks for having us.
So as always, we want to hear from you. Which political issues are top of mind for you as a new governor and the legislature get to work? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Wondering, Mal, tell me about your morning. Have you seen or spoken with the new governor yet?
I have. It was an interesting situation. As Attorney General, she often would kind of pop into the office first thing in the morning and say, I'm going to have a press release suing somebody about something later that day. And this morning, I just turned around and there she was with her bodyguard, basically telling me that I'm going to rename three of Governor LePage's commissioners to another term. And by the way, I'm going to put out an executive order later today dealing with Medicaid expansion to get that started. So it was like deja vu, except she's governor now instead of attorney general, just stopping by to give us a heads up that we're going to have some major issues to deal with today.
And when you say stopping by and popping into the office, Mal, you mean that the governor of the state of Maine took the elevator down to the basement of the state office building and went into the press office to let you know what was going on, right? Steve, you're about to say that something similar happened to you.
Well, Mal's story reminds me of the day after the election when she sort of just came wandering down here clutching a sandwich and a bag of chips. It was sort of, there's the governor-elect coming down to the press corps, which is unusual over the last 8 years. This morning I went up to the communications office where all of her new staff are sort of still moving in and everybody's holding boxes and unpacking them and everything else. And she just sort of wanders over with her security detail, which is a new experience for her as well, being trailed by a bodyguard all the time. And it was just, you know, she was just sort of casual about everything. I mean, I don't know how long that lasts, but it is markedly different than what we've experienced over the last 8 years anyway.
I want to ask each of
you. It's not that unusual, though, Jennifer, going back to previous governors. Angus King would occasionally drop over into the press area and just chat, as did John Baldacci. So, I mean, it has been a LePage phenomenon that he just does not like the press, did not like the press, didn't interact with us unless he had to.
I want to ask each of you about reaction to Governor Mills' inauguration speech last night. But first, we're going to run a little clip of it. And this is just the last minute of the speech, but it hits on at least three of the themes that were throughout. So let's listen to that.
And when a family, a community, a state believe in each other, help each other, love each other, great things can happen. Maine people have greatness within them. Maine is our home. We are connected by the rivers and the land, the forests and the mountains. We are connected by love. We are strengthened by those connections. We are one Maine, undivided, one family, from Calais to Bethel, from York to Fort Kent. And so we meet this evening, free from care. The heirs of Joseph Addian, Joshua Chamberlain, Flyrod Crosby, and Israel Washburn. And tomorrow, we rise before the dawn like the mist over the Sandy River and seek adventure. With hope in our hearts and love in our souls for the brand new day, and to all of you and to all the people of Maine, I say, welcome home. Welcome home!
Steve, I think just in that minute we heard her use the word love three times.
Yeah, and overriding that, I think, is this message that she really wanted to convey last night, which is of change and unity. And that is something that I think she's been talking about that a lot, even in the run-up to her speech, which is that, you know, we have big issues that confront this state, and we have differences of opinion about how to solve those problems, but those differences of opinion are not, shouldn't be barriers, but they should be solutions. And she used her own family as an example, where she described, you know, I mean, she has two brothers who are Republican, or at least one of them is, and she described every sort of family meeting as a sort of a convention at the UN, where but everybody has an idea and everybody's fighting for the microphone. But she, what she said is that that experience with her siblings strengthens their family bond. And she tried to describe Maine as a family as well, trying to get rid of this idea that there are two Maines, and that that the state's problems are the state's problems, not one congressional district or the other, or one more rural areas versus urban areas. And I think that, you know, in theory, that sounds like a great idea. It'll be very hard to execute it. And I don't want to be a killjoy, but maybe Mal has some observations, too.
Well, I don't want to be a killjoy either. But the reality is she put out a lot of broad themes of what she wants to accomplish. Accomplishing those goals is going to be far more difficult. I mean, the reality is she's still going to need Republican votes for some big items. For example, she talked about during the campaign some major bond proposals for a whole variety of projects to reinvigorate Maine's infrastructure, particularly expanding of broadband. Well, that takes a two-thirds vote of both branches, so she's got to pick up some Republican votes. That's a reality that we go forward with, is we're really kind of back to the politics that occurred when she was first elected to the legislature, where Republicans and Democrats fought. They oftentimes would be very angry with each other and then go out and have dinner together. And I think that's what she's hoping to see again, is that, yeah, there's going to be disagreements and, yes, there's going to be some fights. But in the end, they'll take the time to break bread together and work through the issues and come up with compromises that work.
You both have been
covering.
Go ahead, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. To that point, I mean, the Republican response from Senate Republicans last night sort of verified what Mal is saying, which is that the governor has already reached out to them and sort of extended this. I don't know if it's an olive branch, but just saying he opened a line of communication to say, you know, here's what I want to do. Why don't you tell me what you want to do? And let's see if we can do this together. And I think they're very receptive to that idea. I mean, and in part because they don't really have a choice. They don't have a lot of numbers in the legislature. But, you know, but also maybe it would be a welcome sign for them, too. I mean, the two parties have been really clawing each other's eyes out here for the last 8 years. And if there's a chance to do a few things together, I think, you know, they will take that chance, potentially.
Look at one of the top issues during the campaign for her was the expansion of Medicaid. Voters approved it. Governor LePage kept blocking it. And the reality was the legislature had passed Medicaid expansion mechanisms by majority vote. It was the governor's veto power that prevented them from taking effect. And it was Republicans basically in the House upholding Governor LePage's vetoes. That political dynamic is now totally changed. And I think you're going to see them working together more on some legislation. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not going to be some battles, some fights. But the fact is, in past administrations that I've covered, afterwards I've heard from Democratic governors like John Baldacci say, you know, sometimes it was harder dealing with the Democrats than it was dealing with the opposition Republicans. And I think that Janet Mills is going to find that out as well. On some issues, she's going to run into more problems with the Democrats than the Republicans.
You both have been covering her throughout the campaign, the primary campaign, the general election. When she laid out her priorities in her speech last night, were there any surprises to you? Did you hear anything new?
Not especially. I think a lot of it had sort of been laid out during the course of the campaign. I mean, obviously, putting solar panels on the Blaine House is a new specific proposal, although I think she could probably do that unilaterally. I think it's just a detail. And then, of course, the other thing with the sign, like the welcome sign, where she wants to say, have the sign at the Kittery border say, welcome home, which I just took as that as a sort of a repudiation to LePage, who 8 years ago put up a sign in an identical spot that said, open for business. And I think that was more of a, maybe a more of a rhetorical promise that, you know, things are going to be different under this administration. But in terms of specific proposals, I didn't hear that. I mean, there weren't a lot of specifics to be had anyway. I would describe her speech as a rough sketch of ambition that she wants to pursue, because there wasn't a lot of detail, including things like funding for all these things that she wants to do, which was quickly pointed out, by the way, by the Republican senators that I spoke with afterwards. They said all these things cost money, and that's where we're probably going to have some disagreements. And I'm sure she's well aware of that and sort of bracing for that as well. But it was, I think, the speech more than anything else was a message to people who have, Democrats in particular, who have been waiting for this moment for 8 years. And you could just see that during, even in these sort of tedious procedures that led up to her even taking the oath of office. I mean, people were just waiting to stand up and cheer. And I think Democrats have been waiting for that for a very long time.
I think the only specifics we saw were ones she can accomplish herself within the executive office of the governor. She talked about creating an office of innovation. Now, she's talked about the need to innovate, but she's never quantified that as an office within the governor's office to work with her and present her with some ideas. And the same for the I'll shorthand it to drug czar, that she talked about having somebody on her staff that's in charge of coordinating all the efforts to deal with the opioid crisis. Again, she talked about the need to do that in the campaign, but she'd never come out and said precisely that she was going to create this new office. So those two things she can do herself through the executive office of the governor. The other thing she talked about, for example, improving broadband access, that's going to take a bond issue. That's going to take an appropriation. That's going to take some bipartisan efforts to get accomplished.
Yeah, coalition building is the key. And that is really an interesting thing when you consider where, I mean, Janet Mills is used to that as because she was in the legislature. But to become the chief executive and to sort of build a coalition to support initiatives, I think, is challenge number one. And I think, you know, she certainly laid out her intention to do that and to do it in a bipartisan way. Executing it, that's what we're all waiting to see.
Mal, I was in the Augusta office yesterday and saw you reading through a stack of bills that the legislature will face, already finding out what kinds of things are being brought forward and wondering what you can tell us about that.
Well, you got to remember that this is the first regular session of this legislature. So any legislator can put in any bill to do anything. And I can pretty much predict that they will. And we'll see some funny ones that will kind of surprise us. And we will see some pretty, what we call mundane or routine bills. Like there's a bill in to exempt taxation sales to small nonprofit organizations. That's a typical kind of bill. And an act to encourage applied shellfish research. Again, interesting topic. We don't know the details of what that's going to provide yet, because all we have now is the bills being referred to the committees of the legislature. So, for example, an act to require public school buses to be equipped with school bus crossing arms. You know, you sometimes wonder why we haven't done that yet when the studies have shown in other states that those help reduce accidents around buses. So all these kinds of pieces of legislation are coming forward, and how many, we don't know yet. The breadth of them, we don't know yet. And we still don't know, and won't until she decides to tell us, what are the bills the governor's going to introduce? Because the cloture, that is the December 31st deadline for lawmakers to file bills, does not apply to the governor. Mm-hmm. The governor can put in a bill at any time the governor wants to put in a bill. So we're looking forward to what she sets as priorities for pieces of legislation, both early in the session, but also as the session progresses.
Steve, we already know what LD1 is, though, right? We already know what we're starting with this session. LD1.
Right, it's health care. Yeah, it's a health care bill, which essentially aims to refute, I guess, this ruling in, I forget which court it was, out of Texas.
It was a Texas Federal District Court. It's not even gone up to the appeals court level.
Right, and which will be obviously be appealed. But that I felt like LD1 was more of an affirmation of everything that the Democrats ran on this year, which was protecting health care, ensuring access to health care. And LD1, although we don't have all the details of that particular bill yet, is essentially a political statement more than anything. That's what it is right now because we don't have any details, but it's sort of the follow through on what Democrats ran on, which was ensuring access to health care, protecting the access that we do have, which is either through Medicaid expansion or Medicaid or the Affordable Care Act. And so we will see the details of that. But
and it's a bill that's going to get Republican support because it has the elements of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, if you prefer to call it that, that protect things that people want to see, like pre-existing conditions. That sort of protections have broad support among Republicans as well as Democrats. So, LD1 is one of those feel-good bills to start off with because I think it's going to get strong bipartisan support.
You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about the political year ahead, new governor, new legislator. Sure. What do you want to know? The phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Fallbrook Woods, a Maine-owned assisted living community in Portland supporting the unique needs and individual styles of those with memory impairment. And Lee Dodge Chrysler Jeep, featuring the plug-in hybrid Chrysler Pacifica minivan with room for up to 8. Learn more at leeauto.com.
12 years ago, Nancy Pelosi made history.
To the first woman speaker in our history, the gentlelady from California, Nancy Pelosi.
She's gone head-to-head with President Trump.
Please don't characterize the strength that I bring to this meeting.
Now she'll be sworn in as speaker again as Democrats retake the House. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Coming up at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. Tonight at 9 on Maine Public Television, finally the long-awaited return of Doc Martin. A brand new season, Season 8. It premieres this evening at 9 on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the political outlook for Maine in 2019. Joining me, Mal Leary, Maine Public Radio's senior political correspondent, and Steve Missler. He's Maine Public Radio's chief political correspondent. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start in Newcastle with Gordon. Hi, Gordon. Go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I could have a number of specific issues to deal with, aside from the fact that I'm incredibly pleased about the turn of political events. But my specific, or rather general, concern for the years ahead is that of the budget, which both of your commentators have mentioned. I think a lot of Janet's ideas deserve a lot of attention and could do a lot for this state. But in the end, It is the over-budgeting, which, from my limited perspective, which has always seemed to sink a lot of Democratic or, if you'll forgive me, liberal proposals. And I just throw that out as a my only real concern for the years ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon. I don't think you're alone in that concern. Mal, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I think Janet Mills even sort of tempered expectations, if you will, last night when she mentioned the very real prospect, as she described it, of a recession. And so I think, you know, and her even bringing that up, that was a signal, at least to me, that, you know, that, yes, there is a lot of pent up demand, especially from Democrats, for a bunch of initiatives that will cost money. But that demand is going to have to be tempered with the reality of the budget and the situation that the caller just described, and the possibility of an economic downturn. I mean, I think Democrats want to be very careful, and Governor Mills especially wants to be very careful, that they don't overreach, especially in the first two-year budget proposal that they pass, and get themselves into a bind if there is an economic downturn where they're facing shortfalls, which are never good news items to write about. And even if there's nothing that can be done to prevent some of those, because they are a lot of times attached to revenues and the ups and downs of the economy. But they don't want to be put in that position. They don't want to be having been seen as overreached and overspent. And I think Governor Mills is keenly aware of that. That brings me to another point that Mal alluded to early on, which is, yes, she is going to have some battles with Republicans, especially over spending matters. But I do think she's going to have a few with Democrats on those very same fiscal issues, because I think there's a big push in some corners of the legislature to do a lot, and because they haven't been able to do much. And I think Mills, who I would consider more of a moderate Democrat, is going to find herself trying to pump the brakes a little bit on some of those proposals.
And I think that was what I heard when she brought up the question of a possible recession, because right now there's a very sizable revenue surplus, somewhere around $400 million, depending on some of the estimates. But some of that is just one-time money. And there's a big push from some Democrats to use that to start programs for 2 years with the hope that the economy will continue to improve and continue to pay for those programs in out years. And there's going to be a pushback from some conservative Democrats, but also obviously some Republicans, that they should use the one-time money for one-time issues. For example, investment in broadband infrastructure, investment in roads and bridges, because that money we're not sure is going to be around. Now, some of it is. Some of it's growth in our economy that continues to grow at a faster rate than has been expected, even with the trade wars that have been created by President Trump. We're still seeing revenue growth here in Maine that's pretty strong. So that's going to be one of the battles right off the bat as the governor puts together her budget, which is due in February for the legislature to consider. Where does she spend this money? Where does she propose spending this money? And that goes to some of these issues where there's going to be a lot of push from some Democrats to really fill some what they perceive to be serious holes in the state's safety net. And the question is, how big a safety net can we really afford, given the fact that maybe there's a recession on the horizon?
We have an email from Tyler. Governor Mills said in her inaugural address that 50% of Maine energy should be renewable. Is it at all likely that such a change could get through the Maine legislature?
Well, it depends on what that goal is for a time frame. If you say 50% in 25 years, I think from some of the studies I've read, that may be possible. If it's 5 years from now, I don't see how you could get there. So there's a lot of energy issues that we're going to see from this governor that goes to bills supporting renewable energy that were vetoed by Governor LePage. And I think that's going to push for more solar, more wind, more cogeneration by businesses. And I think that's where we're going to see an attempt that gets to more and more renewable resources.
Yeah, and to Mal's point, I mean, Governor Mills left any sort of time definition out of that goal. I mean, which I think was a smart thing to do, frankly, because if you attach some sort of, you know, we want 50% renewables in 5 or 10 years, that's a benchmark that you're immediately sort of held to. And she didn't do that. I found that declaration interesting too, because while her speech was sort of a sketch of all these policy ambitions that she has, what did she lead with? She led with climate change, and that is also a very big contrast to the last 8 years, where that wasn't really discussed a lot in the LePage administration. And Janet Mills basically said that the times for studies are over. We need to deal with this. This is already threatening our fisheries and our economy, and we need to take it head on and right away. And so it'll be interesting to see how she sets that goal for renewables and what else she does in terms of climate change legislation. That's a big mystery to me. I think there's a lot of people who are eager to see what that's going to be.
We'll go to Steve.
That's where you're going to see some major political battles coming up too, Jennifer, because if you're trying to reduce our pollution footprint, if you will, that means trying to reduce emissions. And that means moving towards more cars that are hybrids, more cars that are electric. And yet we don't have a way to tax those vehicles to pay for their use of our roads and highways. Mm. We're still reliant upon the gas tax, which is the old fossil fuel cars and trucks.
Go to Steve in Old Town. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Oh, my gosh. Both you guys sound like two old, crunchy, grumpy old men. I mean, you've become so jaded. But the Portland Press Herald and the Bangor Daily, both, and Mr. O'Leary, I mean, we've become so jaded, I guess, that people can't believe when you get an enthusiastic leader, a gargarious, a Kennedy-esque type of leader, winning an election, because that's what people want her to do. We're all like, well, I don't know if that'll work. She basically, what she said to me is that you're either with us or get out of the way and we'll get it done. And make no mistake about it, Miss Mills will get things done. And if you ever get in a room with her and sit down and go, well, there isn't a Republican in Augusta that she can't turn, let me tell you. And that's the great thing about being a great leader. And again, I bring it back to a Kennedy-esque. Enthusiasm breeds enthusiasm. We can do this. You know, we know there's some things on the horizon, but we need to do this. Welcome home, Maine. I thought it was one of the best speeches by any governor ever. And that's what she is building her support. She's telling people, again, you're either with us or we'll do it without you. And I think that's what both your guests are missing. And I just think that we're going to have a lot of fun. And I'd go anywhere with the Mills family for beers and drinks. And, I mean, we're going to laugh more than we've ever laughed. And there's nothing wrong with it. Let go, fellas. Don't be so uptight.
Steve, thank you so much for your call. I can guarantee you that Steve and Mal are not uptight. But are you guys jaded?
Well, first of all, I admire Steve's enthusiasm about the new Mills administration. I think, you know, the idea that she could just do whatever she wants is not realistic, because she doesn't have a supermajority in the legislature, and she may be able to persuade Republicans. And I think that's what she's trying to do, to his point, and get them on board with some proposals. But the reality is there are fundamental differences between Democrats and Republicans. This is not news. And we are just sort of laying that out for to sort of adjust expectations, if you will. But there's nothing wrong with having high ones for the new administration, if that's what you aspire to.
Mal, you going to defend yourself?
Well, I've been called a grumpy old man by my grandkids, so I guess it may fit sometimes. But, you know, the reality is it was a great speech. It was an enthusiastic speech. We all know that. The problem is taking those great aspirations and turning them into reality. Now, can Janet Mills do it? We shall see. Mm-hmm. 2 years' time, halfway through her administration, she's going to face an election where the legislature could turn again, either one or both branches. I mean, that's the reality of our democracy. So she's got to deliver the next 2 years on some of these ideas she's talking about and channel this enthusiasm that Steve's talking about and get some results. Or we may see some changes come next 2 years from now in terms of the makeup of the legislature.
And to the caller's defense, look, I understand why there are a lot of people who were viewed that speech and they were just sort of effusive about it and enthusiastic. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there really isn't. But, you know, the idea that she's going to just do everything that she wants, it's just not the reality. That's all we're trying to say.
We'll go to Arthur, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Arthur. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Yeah. I'm just wanted to say I'm very happy about this big change. It's bodes well for the future. I'm not Republican, not Democrat, but you know, LePage has been the problem, I think, for the last 8 years, and Maine has been brought to a place where I think a lot of people have been left out. Especially marginalized populations. I'm calling mostly, though, about, substance abuse policies that I hope to see changed. I've, part of that community. I've been working in that area for quite a while. And I would really like to see, legislation that is based on harm reduction, criminal justice reform, naloxone distribution, syringe exchanges, medically assisted treatment expansion, and just treatment centers based hopefully on something like the hub and spoke model.
Sure, Arthur. Thank you. And is this Stephen Mell? Is this what you're hearing Governor Mills talk about?
Yes. I mean, I think she's devoted a good segment of her speech last night, promising to deliver on a lot of the things that is it Arthur? That he has just said, which increasing access to Narcan, which is the reversal drug for overdoses, and expanded access to treatment. Part of that would be through getting the ratification of Medicaid expansion or getting that implemented. I think that is a big deal. The other thing that she focused on, which I think has been a bit of a barrier to getting some of these things done over the last 8 years, is reducing the stigma of this crisis and that people who are addicted to opioids are somehow sort of a lost cause. There's a feeling amongst some that is the case, that there's only so much you can do to help people who are in the throes of addiction. And I think Mills, Governor Mills, I have to keep saying Governor Mills to remind myself, but that Governor Mills had really made a point of reaching out and saying that has to end. These people need our help. And I mean, she made a very personal call to them, I think, to say, listen, I hear you and we're going to help you. We're going to do what we can to help. And I think that's a big difference too.
And the fact that she's going to create within her office this basically drug czar person to deal with all of these issues. Because right now, one of the biggest problems is various silos of treatment that are going on, and there's no cross-coordination that there needs to be. Serious problem in the prisons that's going on now that the caller touched on, because so many of the inmates that are in the prisons are there of drug-related reasons, and yet the jails are hard-pressed to provide them the treatment they need. So there's a lot of issues there, and I think by having this person on her staff focusing on getting coordination of all of those efforts is a very important announcement that she made during the speech.
Arthur, thank you for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook Page. We are talking about Maine politics in the year 2019. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Fidelity Law, dedicated to providing effective counsel on all matters of land use and real estate in Maine. Learn more at fidelitylawmaine.com.
On the next Speaking in Maine, human trafficking in Maine and beyond.
The use of sanctions to target human rights abusers is one of the best, newest tools in the toolkit.
Sarah Mendelson is a scholar and was the ambassador to the United Nations Economic and Social Council. She joins us from the Midcoast Forum in Northport to explore ways of preventing human trafficking. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine, Thursday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
The Maine Public Classical Holiday Stream is still rejoicing and keeping the holiday spirit alive. You can hear it online at mainepublic.org until the middle of January. In addition, In Tune with Sarah Willis is also very active, 24/7, and will be going forward. If you have found yourself waiting to hear Sarah and the music she brings us, now she's waiting for you, anytime, anywhere. To hear our streams, including Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical, visit mainepublic.org and click on Listen Live.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, The Political Outlook in Maine for 2019. My guests are Mal Leary and Steve Missler, Maine Public Radio's political correspondents. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. We began this conversation, Mal, with you talking about Janet Mills' announcement today of the reappointment of three commissioners from the LePage administration. Tell me about those three and also about some of her appointments so far and what they tell us about her administration.
Well, she's used a process with a committee that's done vetting, and they opened it up, and people applied for these jobs, including the three current commissioners who she's renaming. And they are Doug Farnham, the Adjutant General of the state of Maine. He was appointed by LePage, as was Ann Head, who's the commissioner. I believe it's still Business and Professional Regulation. They've changed the name a few times on that department. And Pat Kelleher at Marine Resources, who has drawn high marks from both sides of the aisle for his running of that department. So those are three LePage carryovers, if you will, which I think might surprise some Democrats, with the exception, I think, of the Kelleher nomination. So those are three key positions. They're going to go through the process to stay on as commissioners. And she's been naming commissioners at a very rapid clip compared to previous governors. At this point, after Governor LePage had been inaugurated, I believe he only had named or said he was going to nominate three or four of the commissioners, and Janet Mills is well ahead of that.
Yeah, I think to Mal's point, I think Governor LePage around this time of year, 8 years ago, was talking about how we don't pay commissioners enough because he was having such difficulty recruiting people to work in the administration. And part of that was because he was trying to recruit people out of the private sector where they were making more money. So it was probably a lot harder for him to get his people in. But to Mal's point, she has been nominating a commissioner seemingly every day. I mean, I think the only one that's left is the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry.
And I'm told that's imminent.
Yeah, next week is what I heard last. And so that's the last one. And then, you know, we've got the committees of jurisdiction are in place. So confirmation hearings could begin soon. And potentially that means that these people will be inserted into their posts unless there's some unforeseen move to block these nominees, which I haven't heard anything about. And then that means that would signal the overhaul of these bureaucracies. And soon, you know, they will be not just the commissioners, but all of the employees that work at their discretion. Basically, those changes would be made too. So you would see a complete purge of the LePage administration, ostensibly, and Governor Mills' administration would be put into place. And that's when you can start to see big changes through rulemaking, all these things that are under her authority to do things unilaterally that she doesn't need legislation to do.
A whole lot of calls coming in. We'll try to get to as many as possible. We'll start with Adam in Brooks. Hi, Adam. Go ahead.
Hi. How's it going, Jennifer?
Great.
Great. So I've listened to the three of you in the past interview our former Governor LePage, and I think the big difference, what's inspiring people and exciting people, is there's no hostility in this governor towards the press, towards, I think, humanity in general, to be honest. And if Paul LePage was sort of Trump before Trump was Trump, we're hopeful, at least I'm hopeful, that Governor Mills can be some sort of a symbol into what's going to happen in 2020. I think that she's got this immense position right now. Even though we're a small state, as Maine goes, so goes the nation, right? So hopefully there's this opportunity to see a strong woman stand up to a bully, and then that'll mean something in 2020.
Thanks, Adam, for your call. National implications, Steve and Mal.
Well, you know what? Adam brings up a point that I've seen repeatedly since last night. I think that Governor Mills' speech, her inauguration speech, really got people thinking that perhaps, this is if Paul LePage was Trump before Trump, then, maybe Janet Mills is the harbinger of whatever it is, whoever it is, that's going to run against Trump in 2020. And that maybe there's maybe Maine does lead in this way. It's very theoretical and speculative, but, a lot of people, I have noticed a lot of people talking a lot about that. So it'll be interesting to see if it pans out.
Adam, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Fred, who's calling from China. Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi there. I like your show very much. Your commentators are wonderful, and I like what Janet Mills said last night. My specific question is, what incentives have you heard to help bring kids back to Maine to enrich our great state? And, it's the great brain drain of Maine. We're losing residents, educated, qualified people. Is there anything in this works that we should think about? Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we do have a program that's in place now that will forgive some of the loans that students have to take out. But I think what we heard during the campaign from Janet Mills and from some of the other candidates as well, I will add, is that we've got to do something about the cost of higher education, not just how we pay for it. And the reality is the cost of higher education continues to go up. And, we're talking about some of our top private colleges like Colby Bates and Bowdoin. They're over $50,000 a year. Now, that's a lot of money, particularly if you say you're going to go in the profession of teaching, where it's going to be a while before you make $50,000 a year. So I think that's part of what we haven't seen yet is some of these other initiatives. We've got some initiatives in place to help pay for student loans, but we have not yet addressed the problem itself of the cost of higher education. It's been some talk, it's been some discussion during the campaign, but I haven't seen any initiatives come out yet. I suspect as we see more and more bills come into the legislature that we will see some.
I also kind of wonder if this Office of Innovation in the Future, if I'm quoting it correctly, which she borrowed from Kurt Vonnegut, apparently, if that plays into this as well, because it's in addition to the higher education piece that Mal just talked about, there's also an employer piece, jobs that pay people enough money that not only do, do they employ people, but they employ, they lure young professionals back to the state. People who may have left here for other opportunities that just don't exist here. And I think that was another part of the speech that she talked about. How that is executed in policy is the big question.
Email from Katie. I found it inspiring that Molly and Dana was invited to speak as ambassador of the Penobscot Nation. This bodes well for improved relations with and respect for the Maine tribes and a mutual valuing of our environment. So thank you for that, Katie. We'll move to Bill in Portland. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi there. Well, I think I'm very optimistic about having Janet Mills as governor, and I think she's just the one that can take on the pharmaceutical industry, which I think is arguably has the greatest monopoly and power of any entity that's ever existed. We're taking they're feeding the public drugs from the cradle to the grave. And if you look at our prisons, you'll see a lot of people in prison are on spike meds, and they've been on them since they were kids. And it's statistically significant that, for example, all the mass shooters were on psych meds. It's statistically significant that in the clinical trials, all kinds of violent things happened in the clinical trials, and that's why there's warnings that go with these meds.
Well, Bill, thank you for your perspective. And Mal and Steve, as a former attorney general, Janet Mills has some experience with what Bill refers to as big pharma.
She certainly has. But, more important than some of the things Bill was mentioning is the fact that our state, our small state, has the fourth highest per capita number of prescriptions. It's just amazing. You go into some small towns and there's more drugs being prescribed than there are people. And that goes not just to the drug companies that are making these drugs, but it goes to the marketing and distribution of these drugs. And I think you're going to see efforts, in many cases, joint efforts by the states to try to get at that issue of why are you trying to market more drugs than can possibly be used. Pain medication is the classic one. We heard during the task force of which Janet Mills was part when she was attorney general, of time and time again, someone would go home, say, from major surgery, and they would get a month's supply or 90-day supply of oxycodone, OxyContin, one of those very powerful drugs to relieve pain. When the reality is many people, such as myself, took those pills for 3 or 4 days after bypass surgery. And I didn't take any more. And I had a whole bunch of pills to give back. And that's not atypical. But yet, this overprescribing by some physicians has resulted in the past of large amounts of these drugs being prescribed that never really get used. And then they get diverted. And that's a big problem when you talk to law enforcement, is these drugs sitting around in medicine cabinets, the leftover from parents and grandparents who have had surgeries, ending up being diverted into the black market. So he's on to something there.
Bill, thanks for your call. An email from Ginger. As I recall, the governor's executive security detail has traditionally been male. With a female governor, do we expect to see women on the governor's executive security detail?
I haven't actually seen Governor Mills's. I've seen one man that's part of her detail. But Governor LePage, I think his lead
person
was a woman, I'm pretty sure.
A sergeant,
yeah.
And she's still on the detail. I'm not sure that that's much of an issue. I think there have been women on Governor LePage's detail. You go back to Governor Baldacci, there were. I mean, it just depends on the... There's one simple fact here that affects it, is these are all state troopers, and state troopers have had problems of their own recruiting women over the years. So while there's not as big a pool to draw on.
A tweet from Rick. What can the governor do to encourage offshore wind developers to come to Maine, and will she do it? I'm not sure. Rick asked to come to Maine. Well, we have offshore wind developers here in Maine at the University of Maine. Have we heard Janet Mills talking about offshore wind?
Not specifically, although that would seem to be part of the suite of renewables that she's talking about when she's talking about having Maine, 50% of Maine electricity generation generated by renewables resources. I mean, offshore wind would seem to be a logical offshoot of that, initiative. Of course, we did have a massive offshore wind proposal that was scuttled under the LePage administration. I think the time has gone by that we could actually revive that. So maybe there'll be a new opportunity. I mean, one thing that's happened over the last 8 years is that wind developers have sort of given up on the state because they knew it was a no-go under the LePage administration. But, with a speech that Governor Mills put out last night, that's almost like a big sign, neon sign saying, renewable wind or solar or whatever, we're open for business now. We are here to entertain your proposals. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that an offshore wind proposal would be in the cards for a Mills administration.
We have an email from Barbara. What a joy it is to be effusive about a new day in Maine politics after 8 years of enduring a governor whose countenance was perennially that of an angry bully. Last night's inauguration was joyful and uplifting. Let us enjoy a day in Camelot. We've earned it. Certainly a difference in tone last night, Mal.
Certainly is a difference in tone. And my colleague, we joke about it. His coverage here in Maine as a reporter has been entirely of Governor LePage. And he did not have the benefit of covering Governor Baldacci or Governor King when things were a lot more accessible. They were far more open. Governors I've covered through the years have been far more open to dealing with the press, to answering questions, to producing documents when they're asked their documents under the public's right to know law. So, I mean, they're absolutely right. There's going to be some major changes there with Janet Mills. We saw it this morning as she's continuing what she did as Attorney General, and that is very informally, you know, bopping by to say, oh, by the way, be on the lookout. This is going to be happening today. And, you know, LePage was the outsider, the businessman, totally. Janet Mills has been a political insider, district attorney, legislator, district
Attorney
General of Maine. And you've dealt with her on many, many levels. I mean, my personal relationship with her goes back to when she was elected district attorney and covered her 35 years ago in that role when she was a major leader among the district attorneys. So, you know, there's some long history there and trust builds up that I don't think any of us as reporters were able to build up with Governor LePage because he always might talk with us, but he still mistrusted what we might report.
Well, and to Mal's point, yesterday I was joking with some of the other reporters. We were invited over to the Blaine House, the governor's mansion, just for a quick peek at this reception, this pre-inaugural reception that Governor Mills was having. And I was joking. I was like, "This is the third time I've been in the Blaine House," and I've that's all I've known is Governor LePage, right? So I was there for his inauguration. And I was there for a press conference in 2015, which was an event that I will not detail here, but is memorable. and yesterday was the third time I've been in the governor's mansion.
Well, Steve, you have the last word. Thank you both for being here. I know it's been a long night. That's Steve Missler and Mal Leary, Maine Public's political correspondents. Lucy Suchek ran the board. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Brooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.